Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times bestselling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
Hey guys, Kevin Cruz here. Welcome to the LeadX Leadership Show, where we help you to stand out and to get ahead at work. Now, as you know, we like to switch things up here, keep it interesting, and to continue that tradition, today on the podcast, instead of me interviewing an expert guest, we're going to have the guest deep dive into their topic. You see, you'll be hearing audio from a LeadX webinar. Now, of course, there are dozens of great webinars on leadership, management, communication, productivity, and more, all archived in the LeadX app. Just visit leadx.org for more information about our webinar archive. So enough on the setup, enough background information. Here is Vanya Mathis to introduce our guest and to hand it over to them. Enjoy.
Hi, and welcome to today's webinar, Three Essential Questions to Build Resilience in a Topsy-Turvy Time. Very excited to bring you today's host, the author of The Coaching Habit, which is the best-selling coaching book of the century. In 2019, he was named the number one thought leader in coaching by Thinkers 50. His most recent book is The Advice Trap. Please welcome Michael Bungay-Stanier.
Hey, everybody. I'm Michael Bungay-Stanier. I am best known for writing this book, The Coaching Habit, Say Less, Ask More, and Change the Way You Lead Forever. It's gone on to become this amazing phenomena. It sold about 800,000 copies. It's the number one coaching book of the century. It's really kind of captured people's imaginations. And that was a thrill. That came out 4 years ago on February the 29th, 2016, so on Leap Day. And I've got a new book out in the world. The new book is The Advice Trap. And the first piece of information I want to give you is this. Here's my sophisticated presenting style. Don't write a book. I mean, you've got to have a really good reason to write a book, because it is mostly a miserable experience. Some of you will know this because you've written books of your own. I know Kevin's written books. But the whole process of writing a book, it is terrible. You get this idea in your head and you write a first draft, and it's so disappointing. The first draft is always ugly, ugly, ugly. And then you write a second draft, and honestly, the second draft is not much better, and sometimes it's actually worse. Third draft, you still feel like you're going backwards. Fourth draft, you finally got your act together, and you're kind of working your way to it. By the seventh draft, the book is actually looking okay, but you hate yourself, you hate the book, you hate the idea, you're pretty sure nobody's going to read it. By the time you get your book out into the world, honestly, probably people won't read it. The statistics are grim. It's like less than 1,000 people read most books. So you've got to be really clear about why you would want to write a book. So why would I spend the hours and the money and the time and the energy and all of that sort of stuff on writing a new book? Well, I had a reason. Because whilst I love the success of The Coaching Habit, I mean, I got thrilled by how many people had picked it up. And I get emails regularly from people saying, Michael, this book actually has made a difference. Because in the book, I say, honestly, there are seven good questions. And if you can start using those seven questions, you will become a more effective and efficient and better person in your life. Doesn't matter if you're leading a team, doesn't matter if you're an individual contributor, doesn't matter if you don't work at all, but you just have people who you interact with in your life. Seven good questions take you a long way down the path to being more coach-like. And there are some people who write to me and they go, Michael, I started using your seven questions. I used the kickstart question to begin a conversation, the learning question to end a conversation, the best coaching question in the world, and what else in the middle of the conversation. It's changing everything. And I'm like, I love that. But I also know there's a good number of people who pick up the book. They go, Michael, it's a pretty good book. It's not too long to read. It's funny in bits. It's not so funny in other bits. But you know what? It doesn't suck as a book. But they say, Michael, nothing's changed. You know, I've read the book. And even though I like the seven questions, for some reason, I'm finding it really difficult to change my behavior to be more coach-like. And by more coach-like, what I mean by that is, can you stay curious a little bit longer? Can you rush to action and advice giving a little bit more slowly? So the part of what the advice trap is about is tackling this issue of behavior change. It's really thinking to itself, right, why is it easy for some and why is it difficult for other people to change their behavior to show up and be more coach-like? And really part of this book is about this understanding that there are two types of change in the world. There's easy change and there's hard change. Easy change and hard change. Nice simple model there. So the nice thing about easy change is you're already good at easy change, hence the name. So easy change, it happens all the time. You come to a new circumstance, a new situation, a new challenge, and you don't quite know how to do it at the start, but you tinker around with it and you maybe watch a video or you maybe read a book or you call up your friend and say, how do I do this again? And they explain and you kind of have a first crack at it and you do okay. And then you do it a few more times in repetition and you get better at it. And at a certain point you go, oh, you know what? I've got to the level that is good enough and I'm fine. So this happens regularly. You know, you get a new phone and it takes you a day or so to adjust to the new phone and you get it. You get a new pair of glasses and they're weird the first time you put them on, but then you adjust to them. That's easy change. Hard change is also something you're familiar with. And of course, that's trickier. It's more difficult, hence the name. And with hard change, you probably have experienced this if you've ever made a New Year's resolution in your life, because with most of us, we have, you know, good intentions. We're like, okay, it's January the 1st, or really it's December the 31st. This year, no, really this year. No, this year for sure, I promise what I'm going to do is I'm going to start writing to my mother. I'm going to write a book. I'm going to start exercising regularly. I'm going to eat better. I'm going to tell my kids that I love them. I'm going to start meditating. I'm going to read more. I'm going to watch less. You've got all of those good intentions. And you also know that by, let's say, January the 21st, it's all gone to hell in a handbasket. The best of intentions, the wheels have fallen off a little bit. And then the next year you kind of run through the same list and the next year by January 21st, the good intentions have gone bust. And maybe you've experienced this if you work in an organization, you know, you get your annual performance review and they go, Michael, you know, last year we talked about you needing to work on whatever it is. Well, you're still not very good at that, are you? And if you're like me, you go, you know what? I've been really working to try and figure that out, but for some reason, I can't crack it. It doesn't matter how many books I read, how many YouTube videos I watch, how many courses they send me on. For some reason, even though I kind of get it in theory, in practice, I can't implement it. And I've got a metaphor for you around this. I think easy change is a little bit like downloading an app onto your phone. It's additive. It's adding to your current knowledge. Whereas hard change is like requiring an operating system upgrade. It takes more time. It's more complex and it's kind of rewiring. What we're really doing with easy change is we're tinkering with present you, the present version of you. We're just kind of adding a little bit so you're slightly upgraded around that. What we're doing with hard change is you're actually tackling something that is working towards a better version of you, a leveling up of you, a future you version of you. And hard change is difficult because hard change, future you is over there calling you saying, come here, this is the better life. And present you is pulling you back going, you know what, it's a whole lot easier to eat that chocolate bar, to not figure out that piece around how to lead a team efficiently, whatever it might be. So if this resonates with you and hard change will resonate with most of you because you're like, yeah, I get that. Some things easy to change, some things I want to get better and I struggle to get better. Well, the first step in working with hard change is to get really clear on the cost and the benefit to how you're behaving right now. Well, the language I love to use is the prizes and punishments of your current behavior, the prizes and punishments of your current behavior. Because honestly, we don't really think about it. We don't really think about what we get from how we behave at the moment and the price we pay for how we behave at the moment. So I want to dig into this, and I want to dig into a particular type of behavior, the behavior that I'm best known for, which is this. I want you to think about the power of being more coach-like, the power of being more coach-like. And as you've heard me say before, the way I define that is I'd love you to stay curious a little bit longer and rush to action and advice giving just a little bit more slowly. And there's all sorts of good research, which I'm not going to go into now, but great research that says, effectively, curiosity is a superpower. You know, if you are more curious, it grows you. You become a more effective, more complete person. It grows your team. It helps them have more impact. It helps them create autonomy and self-sufficiency and more confidence and more competence. And even at an organizational level, if you're operating and thinking at that level, it helps your organization be more agile, be more innovative, be more able to adapt and move through the change process. So curiosity really is a superpower in terms of a leadership skill, a leadership behavior, a leadership trait. And I want you to have more of that. I'm not trying to turn you into a coach, but I do want you to be more coach-like. Stay curious a little bit longer, rush to action and advice giving a little bit more slowly. So how do you do that? Well, the best way for us to figure out the prizes and punishments of your current behavior, which is honestly not being that curious, because most of us, honestly, if I can be blunt here, most of us are advice giving maniacs. I mean, we love it. We love giving advice. I mean, somebody starts talking to us and we don't even know really who they are or what's really going on. We don't have the context. We don't know the other people involved. We don't know the technical specifications. We don't know the culture. We don't know the team. And after about 10 seconds, we're like, oh, I've got something to tell you. We've got that thing in our head. It's ludicrous. We've also been on the other end of that, where you start telling somebody something you're up against. And after about 10 seconds, they have the audacity to start going, well, let me tell you what I think you should do. And you know how disappointing and largely useless that advice actually is. It doesn't really work that well. So we're trying to build a new behavior, and it's hard change for many of us, which is to be more coach-like, to stay curious a little bit longer, rush to action and advice giving a little bit more slowly. And I want to get you on the path for that. And here's your challenge. It's a little bit, at this stage, I should play the Mission Impossible music. Your challenge, your mission, if you choose to accept it, is to learn how to tame your advice monster. So let me introduce your advice monster to you, or really your advice monsters. Because actually your core advice monster has three different personas. And the three different personas are tell it, save it, and control it. Tell it, save it, and control it. And really these three advice monsters, they're at the heart of this new book, The Advice Trap. It's like all about how do we tame our advice monsters. First of all, we've got to own up that we've got one, and we do. And then we've got to figure out how do we tame it. We're never going to eliminate it. That's impossible. We just want to slow it down, slow down the rush to action and advice giving. So what I want to do as a way of kind of moving this webinar forward is introduce the three advice monsters to you. And I want you to think about the prizes and punishments of each current advice monster. And here's what I want you to be on the lookout for. I want you to be considering which of these three advice monsters feels most real for you. Because there'll be one that will kind of resonate more, make you go, oh yeah, that one. That one I'm somehow much more familiar with than perhaps the other two. So tell it, save it, and control it. Let's talk about tell it. Tell it's the noisiest of the three advice monsters. Tell it has walked into the room and gone, look, I'm convincing you that the only way you add value is to have the answer. You know, you're at this level now. You need to know this stuff. You need to have the answers. If you don't have the answers, in fact, if you don't have all the answers, in fact, if you don't have all the answers to all the things, you fail. So Some of you will really resonate with this one. You're like, oh yeah, I get that. I feel that burden. I feel that pressure. I feel that obligation and expectation to be the person who has the answers. Now let's talk about prizes and punishments. And I want to make this a little bit interactive. I want you to think about this because you get smarter if you figure this stuff out yourself rather than just being told it. You know, when you think about talent and being the person who provides the answers, who's the go-to person for the answers, prizes and punishments, what do you think the prizes might be? And if you're writing notes for this, you might even jot down one or two things where you're like, what's the advantage of being the person with the answers all the time, feeling like you have to have that answers, being the person everybody comes to for the answers? And you can start guessing immediately what those prizes are. You know, they're, you feel like you're the smartest person in the room. You sense that you are critical to everybody. Everybody looks at you with that kind of glow in their eyes. Oh, he's so smart. She's so clever. You feel, even if you're getting old like I am, you're like, see, I haven't lost it yet. I've still got something to offer this team, this organization, this part of the world. I've got some suggestions there. You've got that high status of being the person people go to ask for solutions. So there are some prizes. But I'm going to suggest that those are short-term wins. They're a little, let's call it ego-based, to get into kind of a bit of therapy speak. Because balancing out the prizes are punishments. So what do you think the punishments are to you, to those who you manage or lead or work with, to your organization, to having you proclaim yourself as the advice guy or gal? You know, what's the punishments that you're there? And you're probably writing some down, taking your best guess. As you write them down, here's what I'd add to what you've already got. You become the bottleneck. You become exhausted. You become inefficient because actually your advice is not nearly as good as you think it is. And by the way, if you're thinking to yourself, Michael, no, we haven't met, but actually my advice is pretty magnificent, I'd suggest you go look at all the TEDx videos on cognitive biases, and you'll just see just how your brain is wired in a way to help you not realize how bad your advice is most of the time. So you've got bottleneck, you've got that high status. There's a deeper thing, which is like the act of disempowerment. Like you're putting out a really key message here, which is like, hey, everybody else, you're not smart enough to figure this out yourself. You're not good enough. I'm better than you are. So there's that act of disempowerment. There, you're now creating people who are overly dependent on you. So they're like, oh, what's the point of me coming up with ideas? They're always overruled anyway. There's always that person with the better idea. So you've now got, you're training your team to only come to you for advice. So again, back to you being the bottleneck, back to them being disempowered. So effectively, when you've got talent with their steering hands on the steering wheel, you are the bottleneck. You are exhausted. You're trying to do an impossible job, which is to have the answers to all the things, which is ridiculous. Honestly, it's just impossible. Your answers aren't even that good. And you're also failing to tap the potential of all those people around you who have a better ownership of the issue, have better insight as to what's really going on, and with a little curiosity from you, a little coaching, would likely generate ideas that are as good as yours, perhaps, and likely actually better than yours. So there's talent, the prizes and punishments of talent. Let's talk about the second advice monster. Talent is number one, and the second advice monster, just let me grab my little bit of paper here. Here it is. Save it. Save it a little quieter than talent, a little less loud. It's put its arm around you, and it's convinced you that your job, your primary job, the way you add value, is to make sure that nobody ever stumbles, struggles, fails, finds it difficult, mucks it up, makes any mistakes. Your job is to save everybody. Your job is to rescue everybody. If anybody fails, if anybody struggles, if anybody makes a mistake, not only have they failed, but you have fundamentally failed. Now, just as with talent, which is when I put it as bluntly as this, which is like, oh, you got to have all the answers to all the things. You know, you immediately go, well, when you put it like that, that's actually impossible. Yeah, it is impossible. Likewise with save it. When I go, you know what, you got to save everybody. Your job is to rescue everybody. You're like, oh, that's impossible. It is impossible. But here's why you behave in this way. There are some of these short-term wins, these short-term prizes. You know, in the book, I call them wins, not wins, because they can feel short-term, but they don't play out in the long-term. But let's go there. What do you think the short-term wins, the prizes of the save it advice monster are? And you might be writing some of these down or just having them come to mind. While you're doing that, here's what I would add. Save it makes you feel noble. Save it makes you kind of have that self-identity of, look at me, I care for everybody. I'm the person with the big heart in this organization and this team. Honestly, there's a degree of burning martyr involved. Oh, nobody appreciates everything I do around here to keep everybody going, to keep everybody happy, to listen to all their moans, to make sure that everybody's safe, to do all the work that covers everybody else's errors, mistakes, inadequacies. I'm just so underappreciated here. So there's that kind of burning martyr piece. And of course, the prizes from other people are like, this is fantastic. You know what? I can be suboptimal. I can be subpar and nothing even happens because there's somebody always, you know, cleaning up after me. So prizes and punishments. So if those are the prizes, short-term wins, ego-based, don't play out in the long term, what are the punishments? And this is kind of the grit of the conversation for you, for them, for the organization. And there are some significant punishments. First of all, it is exhausting. You are exhausted trying to rescue everybody. It's impossible. And you're kind of, you know, opening your veins and bleeding into the ground in an attempt to keep everything going. And it doesn't actually work. And here's the other thing. Rescuers like you create victims. You actually are disempowering others in the very act you're trying to help others. You also create persecutors. If you know the drama triangle, the Cartman drama triangle, victim, persecutor, rescuer, you're right in the heart of that drama triangle. And of course, you're getting in the way of other people learning and growing and becoming better versions of themselves. Somebody once said, wisdom enters through the wound. But you're not letting anybody get wounded. You're not allowing any wisdom to come in. You're not allowing anybody to take responsibility. You're not allowing accountability to flow through to the appropriate level where it should sit in your organization. You are infantilizing the people who are around you. And look, I know that's provocative. I know that you come to it both for tell it and save it with a good heart. You're just trying to help. And it is an act of leadership that is limited and limiting. So there we go. We've got tell it. I need to have all the answers and the prizes and punishments there. We've got save it. I need to save everybody. I'm the rescuer and the prizes and punishments there. And then the third and final one of the advice monsters is control it. Control it's the sneakiest of the three, I would think. It kind of lurks in the shadows a little bit. And it's convinced you that the only way you win is by you maintaining and holding on to control at all times. It's your white knuckled hands on the steering wheel. Don't give those up even for a moment. You need to keep control of everything from the start, through the middle, through the end. If you step away for a moment, if you invite others to step in and step up and lean in, if you delegate control, if you give up control, if you empower other people, chaos will come. And of course, when chaos comes, failure is not far behind. Don't give up control, even for an iota, or else we will all fail. So there's control. Now, as soon as I say it, because I'm shining a light on just how ridiculous these positions are when you hear them put bluntly like this. Can you have all the answers? Of course you can't. Can you save all the people? Of course you can't. Can you control everything? Of course you can't. And yet our behavior has that triggered effect, that reactive effect that we hope that we can. So what do you think the prizes are of control it? Well, again, you might be choosing to write down some of your first thoughts. While you're writing those down, while you're reflecting on them, What I would add is that with Control It, you've got that sense of status, that sense of power, that sense of security, that sense of we'll keep it safe around here, that sense of I'm not made anxious by any kind of unexpected things coming in, that sense of I'm not being bothered by other people's opinions and other people's insights. I'm not having to share and learn how to share power and share control. So there's some stuff that plays off in the short term, prizes, but there are punishments as well. And you can probably start guessing the punishments for you, for them, for your organization. You know, it is exhausting to try and maintain control over all those things that you can't actually control. You disempower everybody around you. You know, you're like, no, I'm in control. I'm in charge here. I've got my hands on my steering wheel. Stay away. And of course, that means that nobody gets to step up and be the better version of themselves. Nobody gets to grow and to learn. You don't allow the future in. You don't allow serendipity in. You're unable to be agile. You're unable to adapt because you're like, I've got a plan and we are working the plan. So this is the start of learning how to tame your advice monster. It's not everything, but you need to start by going, look, now I see my advice monster, that reflexive response to going, my job is to jump in with the ideas, the solutions and advice. I mean, when you have a book called The Advice Trap, it actually sounds a little bit like you're against advice. I'm not against advice. I think advice is critical. I mean, this whole conversation between us is me giving you advice. So I'm not against advice. I am against your reflexive, habitual response to make advice giving the first thing that you always do. And that's what happens. You won't change this until, as a first step, you begin to see the prizes and punishments of your current behavior. And you're at a crossroads right now. You get to say, which one wins? Do the prizes outweigh the punishments? Because some of you may go, look, I get the medium and the long-term damage I'm doing to myself, to my others, to my organization. But you know what? I don't care. I'm just going to carry on because I prefer it like this. Some others of you are going, you know what? I am tired. I am exhausting. I am seeing that I'm disempowering others. I am seeing how this isn't working for me or my team or my organization. It's worth it for me to start changing my behavior and tackling this hard change to become more coach-like, to stay curious a little bit longer, to rush to action and advice giving a little bit more slowly. Now, if you want to go a little deeper in this, The Advice Trap is the website you want to go to. There's at least two free resources there that you might be interested in. There's a questionnaire that allows you to actually answer 20 short questions, and you'll get a suggestion on which of these three advice monster is strongest for you. You get a report with some tactics and other bits and pieces in it as well. So if you'd like to go deeper into what's my advice monster, that questionnaire is definitely the place to go to and check it out. There's also a little piece on that same website, theadvicetrap.com, which goes a little deeper into a process for how to tame your advice monster. So a couple of free resources for you at theadvicetrap.com. All right, here's my question. It's a coaching question because that's what I do. We're about to wrap this up. I want this not to be just sharing content. I want this to be a learning moment for you. And to learn, you actually have to go through the act of reflecting on what the learning was. So here's the question. And if you want this to stick, I'd encourage you to write down your answer to this. What was most useful or most valuable here for you? You know, we covered the stories of me writing the book, the difference between easy change and hard change, the concept of prizes and punishments, and then the three advice monsters, tell it, save it, and control it, and this idea of present you and how the prizes kind of reinforce present you, but punishments and how the punishments get in the way of you stepping towards future you, that leveled up, better version of who you are today. Which of all of that stuff was most useful or most valuable here for you? I'd encourage you to write it down, capture it somewhere, because that's what will make this stick. And if you've invested 25 minutes or so with me in this conversation so far, squeeze the value out of it. Make a difference. I want you to change your behavior. as a result of talking with me right now. And that questionnaire, what was most useful or most valuable here for you, will help you do that. I'm Michael Bungay-Stanier, author of The Coaching Habit, author of The Advice Trap. You can find me at theadvicetrap.com. You can also find me at my regular website, mbs.works. mbs.works. Thanks for being part of this conversation with me today.
Friends, if you like this episode of the LeadX Leadership Podcast, please take a minute, leave a rating on iTunes or Stitcher. Ratings are invaluable for attracting new listeners. And I like to convert those listeners into leaders because, you know, I'm on a mission to spark 100 million leaders in the next 10 years. And if you want to become the boss everyone fights to work for and nobody wants to leave, check out the LeadX platform with Coach Amanda at leadx.org. And if you have 10 or more managers who could use some binge-worthy training, send me an email at info@leadx.org, L-E-A-D-X.O-R-G, and we'll talk about getting you set up with a totally free pilot for those managers. See if they like it. If they don't, that's fine. We go away. Part as friends. But if they love it, you've just found yourself a new resource for them. Remember, leadership is influence. You're always leading. How are you going to lead today?